Kilo Delta Zero Tango Yankee Uniform, Joe here in Loveland. I'm net control for this evening's TechNet, sponsored by the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club. We're looking for check-ins. Anybody wants to check in, please do.
This is Kilo Delta Zero Tango Bravo Bravo, Ken in Loveland.
K0OJ.
Fox Zero Colorado Boy, Fort Collins, Mike.
Mike, what's up?
I don't know. The wind's blowing too hard. Hard to tell. I think I'm still in Colorado, though.
Kind of like you were in Wyoming most of the day, right?
Well, pretty much. Either that or Kansas, but I wasn't here.
Yeah, I know. That was really something else. I kept looking up thinking something's going to fall, but nothing really did.
Hey, by the way, Ed's going to be in on the 26th, and we're going to go to lunch. So if you can get off and go to lunch, we'll see you there.
Okay, the 26th, let me see, I don't know. I really don't know. I knew this was going to happen. You know, this thing is Suncor. That stuff, I'm involved in a lot of that stuff. We did a training, and so what happened was exactly what I thought. I was getting phone calls today about setting up classes till the end of the month, and right now I think 26 is open, but as usual, I don't really know too much.
Well, that's going to be on a Wednesday, and yeah, old Ed, WA5SWD, he's coming into town that day, and we're going to have lunch.
Definitely give it the old college try. I can't, I knew this was going to happen when I saw that thing on TV, so you bet, Mike, we will definitely give it a try.
Okay, so let you go and let somebody else check in. Kilo 50, Colorado Boy.
Thanks, sir. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Zero OJ again.
And Joe.
Well, I think that was a good one. We got OJ and I think James. Let's go to OJ. What's going on?
I don't know. You tell me. It took me two tries tonight, so don't know what to tell you. Yep, I think he's a Wyoming boy, and so am I, and so are we all. Grr. Oh, well, but anyway, that's the deal. So there you go, Kaiser OJ.
Sir, for checking in. W0JBR, I think you were in there, weren't you?
I was, Joe. Good evening. How did the hex beam hold up to the wind tonight?
I was more concerned about my 510. That hex beam just kind of moved a little bit and did fine.
Oh, well, sounds good, Joe. I'll let you get along there so you can finish taking check-ins, and I'm sure we'll catch up later. W0JBR.
Thanks, sir. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's TechNet, please call.
Kilo Echo Zero, Hotel Hotel X-ray, Levi Severance.
Hey, Levi, you got a question for us tonight, right?
Yeah, it's nothing revolutionary, but just something I was looking into. I can ask that whenever you guys are ready tonight, but I'll let you get some more check-ins in the meantime. K0HHX.
Yeah, to answer your question on my side, I don't know, but the guys that actually gave these things to us, they're the ones that will tell us. So thanks, Levi. I'll keep you in mind. Anyone else want to check in for the night snap, please call.
Kilo Echo Zero, Kilo Bravo Sierra, Dean and others.
How are you, Joe?
We had a perfect double. Dean, what's new?
Oh, not a whole lot. I see the FCC was nice enough to upgrade me to general today.
That's cool. Well, I'm sure glad you're getting out. I saw your email after we talked, so that's cool.
Oh, thank you. I've been having a lot of fun playing on the HF band.
Very good. Well, thanks so much, Dean, for checking in. Someone else was in back of that, and all I caught was, hi, Joe. You're a little rough, but I think it's more or less the wind that's causing trouble. Hi, Mike. What's new with you?
Well, I lost a lot of shingles and I lost the fence, so we'll see what trouble is tomorrow.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do tomorrow. Hopefully it'll be a lot better.
Wind's supposed to be tomorrow afternoon, they say.
I didn't try anything fancy with these antennas today, but I was working on cars and other stuff, so. Thank you, Mike, for checking in. Let's move along and see if we got anybody else come in there. Please call.
Kilo Zero, Delta X-ray Victor, Angeles Doug.
Would you come back? I got X-ray Victor. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Hey, Roger, the call sign is Kilo Zero, Delta X-ray Victor. Kilo Zero, Delta X-ray Victor, handles Doug.
Okay, K0 DXV. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate that. You're new to us tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, Roger. I'm in Loveland, and I haven't really heard a whole lot of activity on 2 or 440, so when I heard the net, I thought I would check in. This is the first time I've used this radio pad.
Oh, well, I'm sure glad you did. We have two nets we run on this one, and then there's a Tuesday night wars net. This one starts at 7 and gets over with sometime about 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, you hope not. Tomorrow night there's a, I can't be yet, it starts at 7:30 on their 2-meter side, and then we have this one, I have a club net on Wednesday night, which I won't be at this next Wednesday. I've got other things I have to do, so. But normally I'm the MC of that, I don't know who's going to take it. So, but glad you could come.
Hey, Roger, this is a club. I'm, you know, I've only been here about a year and I haven't made any connections. So this is a club
now? I'm sorry, I only caught about half of that. Would you come back, please, with that?
Oh, I was just asking if this is a club net. Go ahead.
Sponsored by NCART, Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club, but it is not for only club members. In fact, probably 30% of the people that check in are not club members, so you are more than welcome.
Okay, Rod, thanks.
This is Kilo Delta Zero, Tango Yankee Uniform, or KD02YU, Joe here in Loveland. I am net control for this evening's TechNet. Sponsored by the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club. I'm looking for check-ins. Any check-ins, please call.
Kilo Echo Zero, Hotel India Mike. Rick in Bellevue.
Rick, what's new with you?
I don't know about new. Pretty much the same old stuff. We're up here. How the wind's kind of calmed down now, though.
Yeah, it was kind of brutal most of the day, but yeah, I think it has too. Well, thank you, Rick, for checking in. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Kilo Echo Zero Juliet Whiskey Hotel, Gary and Greeley.
Good evening, Gary. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, doing great. Just staying out of the wind.
Windy and Greeley.
We got it today. I had my leaves all cleaned up and now you can't tell that I ever did anything.
Uh-huh. Definitely know that problem. Well, thanks, Gary, for checking in. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
W7 Radio, Fox Mobile.
Hey, Dan, what's new?
Well, at my location, I clocked 73 miles an hour on my Davis weather station this morning at 9:46 a.m., and it was, for the most part, between 40 and 60 miles an hour most of the day, and it's reasonably calm right now. So here on the southwest side of Fort Collins, it's mild and reasonable, back to being that way anyway. And Joel, I got your request about the radios. I will get with you, and we'll try to make some choices and find out things. I'll talk to you about that later. But other than that, on the way to a hockey game, so I'll be listening for about 15 minutes. W7RF.
Thanks, Dan. I'm also going to send you a note and see if I can come see you, or you can put those things in your mailbox about quarter after four tomorrow.
Okay, you'll have to send me another reminder, because I'm on the way out at the moment.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. I forgot about it until you checked in. I was going to do it all day and just forgot. Thanks, Dan, for checking in. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Kilo Delta 5, Oscar Romeo X-ray, Joe Fort Collins.
Hi, Joe, what's new with you?
Oh, about the same. Weathering out this windy weather.
Well, I'm sure glad you could check in with us. Is this the 8800 you bought?
No, it's a Bofang I bought for $26, like the one you loaned me from the club. Seems to be doing pretty good.
It's doing fine. Anyway, let's move on, see if we can get some more check-ins before we start. Any check-ins, please call.
K0KNJ, Shannon, Fort Collins.
Good evening, Shannon. What's new with you? Okay, anybody else want to check in for tonight's nap, please call. Okay, I'm going to take one more pass. This is Kilo Delta Zero, Tango Yankee Uniform, Joe here at Loveland. I am net control for this evening's TechNet, sponsored by the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club. If anybody wants to check in, remember you do not have to be a member of the club in order to participate, so please check in. Okay, moving right along, Levi sent me a note, and I really didn't have a good answer for him. And I think, Levi, go ahead and ask your question, please.
I have a little Yaesu handheld. It has a power port on the side. Theoretically, you can buy a car charger, put it into the cigarette lighter, and charge your lithium-ion battery. I'm wondering if the same could be done with a portable solar panel. I'll let this drop here. What I'd like to do is have one of those portable solar panels. They literally cost between 20 and 50 bucks. You can take them up the mountain, take them on a hike, put it out while you're eating lunch, and charge your battery. I'm wondering if something could be done easily without damaging the lithium ion battery. I want to make sure that I'm matching that solar panel to the correct charging. And just wonder if anybody had any information or insights on that.
OJ, what do you know?
Well, I'm going to hazard a guess here on the little rubber flaps that close the hole on the thing. Does it say like 9 volts DC or 4.8 volts or what?
EXPDC, that's Echo X-ray Tango, and then on the bottom, Delta Charlie.
So it doesn't say. I guess you'll have to consult the book on that. I'm guessing, well, I don't know which HT you got either, because they make more than one. Consult the book. If you didn't get a book, you can always go to Yaesu and download one.
Yeah, I looked through the book and I looked at the charger that I have that dock that I have for it. And the amperage on it is pretty low. It's 800 milliamps at a little over 12 volts DC. So I was wondering if I stayed below that with a solar panel, would it be okay to do a direct charge on it through that port?
Well, I would assume so. The whole radio probably on transmit draws 0.8 amps, so all I know is your charger is good up to 8 amps, 12 volts, so don't know. Consult the book. And you also get in the mic more. We can hardly hear you. K0J.
Well, I might just give it a try, and worst case scenario is I'll need to keep an eye on it, make sure it's not getting too warm or something. I appreciate the help. K0HHX.
Yeah, Joe, this guy was so low in the audio that the courtesy beep had a substantially louder deviation than that fella's audio. So unless he is speaking a foot away from the microphone, I would suspect he's got his fang set in the narrow position for transmit deviation. Just my guess on that. W7RF.
Levi, did you pick up on that?
I did. I'm talking about an inch and a half or 2 inches away from the mic. As for the other part, I'm going to have to consult the book to see exactly what that means and how to adjust that setting. I appreciate the help on that. K0HHX.
Anybody else have any comments for Levi about his situation as far as his solar bill goes?
Well, getting back to the HT, if you have a choice between FM and NFM, meaning narrow, it used to mean that narrow FM was 5KC. It now means 2.5KC. So not the wide, but the regular standard FM should be 5KC, Dave.
That's ringing a bell. I think I ran across that in the book when I was reading it the other day. I'll have to take a look at that setting. Have to find out how to get that changed. Every time you change something on the radio, you don't do anything for a couple months, and then you have to reread the manual to figure out how to work your radio again.
And of course, learn a little bit of Japanese to English.
That's the other struggle.
Hi, K0J.
You got the wrong knees there, Joe. Isn't that a Baofeng to be Chinese?
You're breaking up a little bit in there. Go ahead, come back, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. As I said, OJ, I think you got your wrong knees. I think it's Chinese.
I thought he said Yesu.
Oh, okay. But then if that's the case, I stand corrected. I thought it was a Baofeng. All right, sorry. W7RF.
Levi, what radio do you have? Excuse me. What radio do you have there?
I'm running a Yaesu FT60R.
Whiskey 2, Mike, India, Charlie, late check-in.
Oh, hi, Mark. How are you?
Wretchedly ill. To answer Levi's question, I also have a Yaesu FT60R, and I have a 14-watt solar panel, and I can indeed charge my radio, but not the way he's asking. The way to go is to get the AA battery pack, which takes 6 rechargeable AA batteries, your favorite solar panel, and a USB-driven AA or AA battery charger, and you are good to go.
I was wondering about that. I do have the spare battery pack that accepts the double A's. And with the double A's, as the power runs down in those, does your signal get weaker? Because I know with the lithium ion, the signal strength stays pretty consistent throughout the life of the charge. Can the same be said with the AA batteries that are rechargeable?
Yes, they will give you full power output with clean audio until they roll over and die. There is not a gradual fade.
Well, that takes care of my concerns and seems like a much simpler answer to this problem. I think I might give that a shot. Just out of curiosity, what solar panel do you have that's worked well for you?
I have the 14-watt Anker, A-N-K-E-R, off of Amazon. And in retrospect, I would splurge the extra $20 and get the 21-watt Anker panel.
I'll have to take a look at those. Thank you.
Mark, since you actually helped me start, or actually came up with the idea for these, for the library, actually the original question that he sent to me was, do one of our books have something on this type of solar cell versus whatever he was trying to do?
Yeah, the handbook does.
Well, yeah, that's easy because I've got, probably got seven of those things here. Take a look on the website and see which one you want and give me a shout.
Is that the ARRL handbook?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take a look at that and let you know. Thanks, Joe. KE0HHX, back to net.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. I'd like to go talk to Dean. Dean, you're out there, I know, KE0. Shoot, I forgot the call. Dean, are you out there?
I'm right here, KE0 KBS.
You've all heard my horror stories with MFJ. I'd like you to hear a good one. Dean had a problem with an HF, not a high gain, but a Hustler antenna, which is MFJ, I guess. And he got some pretty good support. I'd like you kind of to talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind, Dean.
Sure. Yeah, I've got the Hustler 5B TV, the 5-band trapped vertical. And I thank Joe because he came over with his analyzer. Since I had an idea of what I was doing, but wasn't certain, and was checking the SWRs at the radio, spent about, four and a half hours tuning this antenna, and I actually have a 10 meter through 80 meter, SWRs are at 1.5 or less, with the exception of the 80 meter, which is a pretty small part of the band that we got tuned in there. The only issue I had was I had made the antenna, physically short as I could, and I was still over 2 on my SWRs, and called the tech support line, and she asked about adjusting the traps, and I said, well, the directions I got say don't touch it. And apparently that's an older version of the directions, so she pointed me out to their web page, gave me directions to adjust the traps, and got them dropped down there, and, it actually was working great, and found out that the SWR meter in my radio is pretty darn close to what we had when Joe came over with his analyzer. I guess the only thing I can say is I'm having a blast. I think I've talked to 15 states now and 2 countries.
Oh, I haven't heard of the 2 countries. What countries were they?
I talked to a guy in London, Ontario, Canada, and another one in Havana, Cuba.
That's really super. That is very, very super. I haven't talked to Q about that. To me, the conditions haven't been all that great, but I don't know why. It could be the radio. But anyway, that's really super. You know, we always cuss these guys, and I do, when they don't help, and then you find a story like this that just kind of makes you think that it went good. So you're out there DXing a lot, huh?
Well, kind of, I guess. I don't know. I'm still not real comfortable with, you know, calling for people, so I've been kind of just cruising around in the bands, you know, and listening for people calling. And, you know, last week where it was really kind of fun because they had a special event thing for Fire Prevention Week, which is, you know, right up my alley. And they had 11 stations, and I managed to contact 7 of them.
You did better than me. I only got one.
Now, the only thing I've noticed, though, is, I don't know, is 10 meters, is that just a band that nobody really uses unless you're on one of the coasts?
Somebody care to take that?
This is Ken, KV0TBB. I use 10 meters all the time when it's open.
Okay, well, maybe that's just, maybe it's just not open very often, I guess. It seems like I've never really heard anybody on there.
Well, it depends on the, you know, what frequencies are open, but yeah, I have talked around the world on 10 meters, and I'm waiting for it to open back up because I've got a group that I meet with every day of the week. They're based out of Pennsylvania, and I kind of miss them, you know, waiting for that to open up so that I can get back in touch with them.
Okay, well, Joe showed me this, I don't remember what it was, Joe, there was some website, a DX website where you, the DX Summit, that's what it was, you know, and I was kind of watching that, and you see all these on 10 meters, but it's all, you know, like California talking to, you know, Japan or something, or somebody over on the East Coast talking to Europe, but I never hear, you know, either one or either side of the conversation.
Well, unfortunately, you know, we're on the downward slope of the sunspot numbers, and until that improves quite a bit, 10 meters isn't going to be very good.
Okay, well, and I'm slowly learning the, you know, sunspots and different propagation things, and, you know, I'm pretty much just overloaded with how much information is out there.
Well, I would encourage you just to keep reading and keep asking questions, and, you know, someday you'll be the expert.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, right now I'm just having a ball, you know, and Joe was, you know, sitting in here, and Joe actually made my first contact for me, and, you know, because I really wasn't sure how to even call for somebody, so been having a lot of fun with it.
You're doing real well, Dean, really well. I was surprised we got that guy from Oregon. I just took a shot at 20 meters and hoped for the best, and there's a guy there just waiting for us to talk to him. So now you're doing fine. And as far as sunspots goes, as Ken likes to say, and he's absolutely right, then you'll be the expert, because I tell you what, that's a tough little science to figure out. I've been working a little bit with it just lately because my bands have been just junk. A lot of it, I think, is the 857, but it's still, I can't receive near what you can with the 991.
I've been, getting better, I guess. You know, there's so many different little buttons and gadgets on this radio, playing with the different filters and stuff to try and learn how to tune something in. And about the time I get it, that's when, it goes away, and then I got to go find a different station to try to tune in.
Well, the interesting thing is that a friend of mine once told me when I started working HF, the one word you have to remember is patience. That's what it's all about. W2MIC, you got any comments for Dean on HF?
W2MIC. Oh, just a reiteration that yes, the SWR meter in your 991 works exactly as well as the SWR meter in Joe's antenna analyzer. The antenna analyzer is a little bit more convenient to use, but they both do exactly the same thing and give exactly the same result.
Well, I kind of figured that obviously a brand new radio, I was hoping everything would work, but I knew, I had that tuner in here, but really wanted to try and get the antenna tuned so that I wasn't, wasting the efficiency of the antenna. And it made me feel a little bit better knowing that what I did was right and having somebody else take a look at it that knew a heck of a lot more about it than I did.
Oh yeah, we call that a sanity check.
Well, and my sanity was certainly needing to check by the time I got done tinkering with, moving that antenna a quarter of an inch, come back in, go through the band, check everything, go back outside, drop it another quarter of an inch, and I was getting really good. I was a professional at putting that antenna up and down.
That is a nice thing about having a handheld signal source that goes out to it. You can kind of tune it out there. You don't have to keep running back and forth.
Yeah, well, I think I got my exercise for the week.
Sure you did. OJ, you got anything to say to Dean? You worked a little bit with him on that Osler, haven't you?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm still waiting for him to become a beam spinner, so, I will say this about his internal versus antenna matcher SWR bridge. The one you want to make happy is the one in the Yahoo, not the antenna matcher itself. Once it gets flat, check if your Yahoo says you're flat. If you ain't, make it happy and not the tuner, because the voltage that will fold back your finals is dependent upon what the internal SWR meter says versus the tuners.
Yeah, well, and I guess the only thing I haven't done is now that I have confirmed with Joe's analyzer that my SWR is 1.5 to 1 or less. So I haven't really used the tuner. I guess I could still use the tuner and bring it back down where it would be at 1 to 1. I haven't done that. I don't know. Should I do that?
Yeah. You make the rig happy, not the tuner. If the tuner says you're flat, but your rig says you're like maybe 1.3 to 1 or 1.5 to 1 or whatever, or if they both match, that's pretty good. But it's the meter in the 991 you want to make happy. So it just, once your tuner says it's flat, then see whether the 991 says it's flat. If it ain't, then tweak the tuner to where the 991 is flat.
Okay, well, I can do that. And most of the bands that I'm talking to, on the 20 meter, even on the analyzer, I was about 1.2. And I know when I'm talking
the SWR meter will just barely come up, you know, one or two little light bars, so I'm at 1:1, maybe 1.1 or 2. It's hard to really narrow it down on the meter because it's got, you know, three bars, but it's going from 1 to 1.5.
Yep, it is good to know where your antenna goes at the flattest as well, without just going through the tuner, around the tuner, through it, not using it to do the matching, but see where your antenna is resonant. That's something you should know as well. Anyhow, K0J to make Laura's henchman happy.
Hey, KE0 KBS. Well, and I did do that on each of the bands. I put the lowest frequency and the highest frequency, found the center, and then also divided, the center to the bottom and the center up. So I had at least five different frequencies that I was checking the SWRs on each band. Yeah, he was pretty much in the middle when I was there. He was in the middle of a general band. When he becomes an extra and gets a little bit more both sides, then we might have to do some little tweaking. But he's so close that there's nothing above 1.5, and so I would poke the button and let it do its thing, and you'd be cool.
Okay. Well, and I may still play with the little tuner thing just to make everything flat. I don't know. I gotta say, you guys have been a pretty fun and friendly group of people here that have helped me out with a lot of my stupid questions.
There's no stupid questions, Dean, to be honest with you. I've got a hex beam up here that, I don't even know how many bands it's got the thing. But anyway, the worst case on this is a 1.3. And because we're running a amplifier on this thing, I tuned that 1.3 down to where the meter doesn't even move. And I just poke the button like you do, except I've just got an external tuner. And it's just safer all the way around, like OJ says, just to hit the button. It's not going to hurt anything, and you're not really losing efficiency because you basically haven't got it anyway. But you're so close that you just hit the button,
Okay. Well, I guess I do have to admit to my stupidity there. I was reading the book on the tuner, and I'm talking to Joe on the phone, and I couldn't figure out why, I would push the button to turn the tuner on, and it says push and hold the button to make it tune. So I do that, the radios go click, 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 and then I was, the next thing it said, to turn the tuner off, you push the tune button again, so I was turning the thing off, and couldn't figure out why when I keyed the mic, my FWRs were the same place it was. Then it finally dawned on me that I was turning the tuner off, and I should be leaving it on.
Mark, W2MIC, do you have anything about tuners you'd like to mention to Dean?
W2MIC, sure. The general goal is to get your antenna itself physically tuned, in other words, length adjusted, that quarter inch discussion you were having, and then go back to your radio, and once you've confirmed that you are good with the antenna and no transmatch, turn the transmatch on. It can't hurt. It might help. I would suggest that once a month during the windy season, which is now through about April, you turn the transmatch off and run your SWR meter to confirm that your antenna itself has not been physically changed by the battering of the wind. You've got those numbers. You can quickly confirm that, yes, all is well. Turn your transmatch back on. Go back to operation.
Okay, yeah, I could do that. It was taking a beating today. I think they said, the National Weather Service said Greeley was getting a 52-mile-an-hour wind with gusts in the 60s.
In my foggy memory from reading the tech specs on your antenna is it's rated for 50.50. So, yep, when the wind goes above 50, I would certainly do an SWR check to make sure nothing has gotten bent or moved around or changed or slid or cracked or broken or whatever.
Okay, well, and I did add a fourth guy wire or guy rope to it, so the very top little whip piece for the 80 meter was about the only thing really moving. Everything else, yeah, it's got a little bit of give in there, but it was staying pretty straight. Probably a good idea to go back and just recheck things since I've got the paper right in front of me with all the numbers.
Back to net, Joe.
One thing about it, too, is he's kind of close in. His backyard, the area he's got it in, is really close to his neighbor's house. So it's not like you've kind of got a wide open surface out there either. So he's got a little bit of protection with all that also. Plus, he's bouncing out there. I'm not sure that helps, but it might stop it a little bit. any other things that Dean could do? Okay, before we go on with our topic here, I'm going to kind of tell you that at the club meeting on Saturday, we kind of mentioned that we were talking about moving this net to 6:30, and I got a whole bunch of folks that voted for that. So I think starting next week, we'll start at 6:30, if that's okay with everybody, and if nobody has a very big problem with it. Most of the people sent me notes that says, yeah, 6:37 didn't really make much difference to them. And then we had some people that thought it'd be a better idea. I think I had two people that said they would rather stay to 7 o'clock, but it really wasn't a big deal, so it doesn't seem like we're hurting a whole lot. And it is consistency, because our Wednesday night net goes at 6:30. So as of next Monday night, we will start this thing at 6:30 and maybe get out of here a little earlier, or not. It makes no difference. Anyway, our topic tonight is radio waves, and that's a kind of a generic topic, and I'd kind of like to start out with a discussion on, first of all, how they work, and second of all, talk about a little bit about how they would work UHF, VHF compared to HF. Usually start up with Kerry, but he's not here tonight, W2MIC, would you care to start us tonight?
Magnetic waves, and way back in the, I believe, 1700s, we started to figure out that when you move a magnet, you get both a magnetic wave and an electrical wave. When you run electrical current down a wire, you get both an electrical wave and a magnetic wave. In other words, they're coupled. They're really left hand and right hand are the same thing. In order to make a radio wave, the first technique used was a spark, literally, and later on that became what is called a spark gap transmitter. They're not very friendly because they're all frequency transmitters. They do, however, work, and the early transoceanic radios used spark gaps, and the early ship-to-shore and ship-to-ship communication used spark gaps. These days, we can do much better than that with AM and FM and single sideband and all that kind of good stuff. Electromagnetic waves work exactly the same way from 160 meters up through VHF and UHF. The only difference between them is the length of the wave, or the wavelength. Sorry, you knew that was coming. Joe, help me a little more with what you're asking.
Yeah, you're right on track for what I'm looking for.
There are some extremely good tutorials on YouTube. A few weeks back, AD0JP sent me an email asking what the heck a circularly polarized wave was and how that worked. And so I offered to take him out for coffee for a few hours and draw lots of pictures. And then I found that there are very, very good animations on YouTube that show how electrical waves and magnetic waves move in relation to one another, And I was really jealous because I spent about 2 quarters in grad school learning that. And the good YouTube videos teach everything I learned in about 10 minutes.
WIQ.
Good evening. Excuse me. Good evening, Gary. Do you have a comment?
Well, since it's a signal, an RF is a signal, and when it goes to an antenna, it's the alternating current in the antenna making the alternating wave, magnetic wave. So I'll just leave it at that. But there, Dave, W0LED, sent me an article one time talking about how antennas work. And it's basically the electron movement in the conductor of an antenna vibrating and making a magnetic wave that is semi-vibrating with it. So that's basically it.
Okay, we've got these radio waves, and how come UHF and VHF is different as far as transmitting than HF is?
Speaking here of bouncing off the ionosphere or not?
Exactly.
Ooh, where's Terry when we need him? Generally speaking, there is a maximum usable frequency, and depending on how much solar activity we have had, how many sunspots in particular, and how much solar radiation and solar particle flux we've had, the ionosphere will be charged up or a little bit less charged. And what frequencies will bounce off the ionosphere depend on how heavily charged the ionosphere is. More sunspot activity, more charge, a higher and higher frequency will bounce. Lower charge, as we're having right now with a very quiet sun and few or no sunspots, it will be the longer waves or the lower bands, 160 meters, 80 meters, 40, 20, that will bounce off the ionosphere. When the solar activity is high, relating back to the 10 meter question earlier, 10 meters will open up. And Terry actually goes around the world and measures this stuff, so he's the best guy to ask. But the general answer is that what will bounce off versus what will go straight through, the higher the frequency, VHF, UHF, gigahertz, will tend to go straight through, and the lower frequencies, the HF bands, will tend to bounce. The differentiation between HF and higher than HF is, generally speaking, 10 meters and below, down through 160, will bounce, whereas VHF and UHF will almost never bounce.
You brought up one point I'm curious about because I'd never heard that explanation like that. Almost never bounce. Is there a potential for it to bounce?
WIQ with a thought.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I'll just put it this way. The lower the frequency, it is easier to reflect, no matter what you're trying to bounce it off of. And the higher frequency is harder to reflect, so it takes a denser reflective material to reflect it. So, hey, that's the observation I've made and the way I think about it. Low frequency is easier to reflect. Thus far, bouncing it off the ionosphere takes less ionization. Higher frequency takes more ionization because it makes a denser reflective surface, things like that.
KD0ZWU, late check-in. I'll bet everybody's saying, geez, he's here, thank God, Terry. This is right up your alley. Yeah, sorry, Joe, I had to work late today at a rocket launch party. That's really cool. Anyway, we're right up your alley. We're trying to figure out radio waves and how they deflect and how they don't deflect. Would you care to explain? Yeah, I'll try to make it as simple as I can. Radio waves, you know, once they've been generated and as was talked about here, once they leave the antenna, they travel in straight lines unless something causes them to not travel in straight lines. Now, at UHF and VHF frequencies, those somethings are usually geography. They're going to reflect into something, an object between you and the transmitter, because that propagation is generally line of sight. Most of that energy escapes into space. However, there's a thing called the ionosphere, and there's also a thing called the troposphere, and these are atmospheric layers that cause radio waves to reflect. And the reflectivity of these layers depends on, in the troposphere, it depends on how turbulent it is. In the ionosphere, it depends on how much ionospheric plasma there is. Both of these things, especially the plasma, tends to turn radio waves around back toward the Earth. And there are several ionospheric phenomena. Sporadic E is one of them. When you talk about 10 meters, then you know that occurs in the summer time in our hemisphere, and that can give you 10 meter and even 6 meter and 2 meter communication. But as we are entering the decreasing sunspot number, solar cycle, that is an 11 year cycle. We're going to be restricted to lower and lower frequencies of propagation that will get outside our line of sight for the next 4 or 5 years. 80 ZWU back to net.
Thanks, Terry, for that. So we're in the middle of this solar cycle.
We are on the declining edge of what was a very weak solar cycle.
I guess what you're saying is, Ken asked when we can get in 10 and 6 meters. That probably is not going to happen for a while.
Yeah, as to the 10 meter question, probably not until next summertime, starting around July. And that's for sporadic E, and by definition it is sporadic, and so you don't know when it's going to open and when it isn't. But it is predominantly like thunderstorms. It's actually tied to thunderstorms. It's like a thunderstorm. You never know exactly when or where it's going to hit you.
Now, does 6 meters also follow that?
Yes, but it takes more of the sporadic E plasma density to allow the 6 meter propagation compared to the 10 meter.
Interesting. I guess, now, I've never tried this. Well, we tried it with you one time. It didn't work, where we basically were trying to talk line of sight with 6 meters. Is that a potential we do that?
Line of sight brings in a very different set of obstructions. Like I said, it's the same physics, it's the same Maxwell's equations that govern the propagation of everything from DC to daylight and X-rays. However, it deals with what is between the receiver and the transmitter. Now, if there's absolutely nothing, if we're two receiver and transmitter out in space, then we don't have to worry about very much. But here on Earth, if we're trying to communicate line of sight, we have buildings and trees and mountains in between transmitters and receivers. And those start to become more significant as the frequencies increase. This is why, for example, a lot of people use 2 meter to get around the hills, because the 2 meter can refract a little bit around the hills, whereas a 70 centimeter is more easily blocked by a piece of rock.
Interesting. Katie's at TYU for identification here. That's very good. I guess I didn't realize that, especially I know Dan really likes to do 6 meters, and I've tried it a couple times, and with very, very little success. So now let's talk a little bit about the difference between going AM and going sideband. I'm going to move so everybody gets a chance on this thing. Carrie, what would be the difference? Why do we use sideband on HF? N0WIQ.
Sure enough, Joe. It's just one of those things. AM is a carrier and two sidebands. So it is about 6 kilohertz or 7 kilohertz wide in spectrum what it uses. Single sideband takes one of the sidebands and not a carrier and not the other sideband. So it only has one sideband, so it's only about 3 kilohertz wide. And then it's, in that respect, it's more efficient because you're only amplifying the one sideband.
Hey, well, that kind of makes sense. I actually found something online. I did post something on the radio waves thing in our resources bunch, and somebody called it Satan's sideband. Had anybody heard of that?
Called it what?
Satan's sideband.
I'm still not getting the first word, but I've never heard of it before.
Satan as in the devil.
Well, that's just because they don't know that good AM is angel music.
That could be, OJ. Do you care to comment on the single sideband? Everybody seems to use it, including you do it on 2 meters.
Well, let's see here. One other thing that I noticed, now I never got to experience this because by 1969, AM was pretty much frowned upon. Yeah, I got to experience some of it, but not like it used to be when there was nothing but AM. There is a movie that I think everybody should watch called Voice of Victory. You can look it up on YouTube and watch it. But in that movie, a little bit in the movie, it showed a roughly 1938 film clip of a guy working phone from Chicago to California. And it was just heterodyne city from one end of the band to the other. Back then, you know, you called CQ and whatever frequency you were on and listened up and down the band for somebody who was calling you. But anyway, so you have a carrier mode like AM, and FM would have done it too. You'd have carrier or heterodyne squeals and all kinds of stuff all up and down the band. If you ever listen to an AM signal on with your in the single sideband mode, you'll know what I mean when you tune up and down it. And if you had a carrier sometimes as close as 2KC apart from one another, you'd always have a constant 2KC whistle. Oof. So anyway, besides making more room, much more power efficient, like that. Also, you can detect it down to a lot more than you could an AM signal. You might still hear the carrier, but the modulation is unrecoverable. You just couldn't make it out. Sideband, you can go another, I believe it's 6 to 9 dB more because of the concentration of power and no carrier eating up power and et cetera, et cetera. So those are the other factors that when AM was thought of and everything, and not AM, but sideband. And sideband, they knew about it even as early as 1915. And the first sideband signal was generated because down at 20 KCZQ of the antenna was such that the one side band would make it, the other one would not. But that's basically it. Power consumption, width, getting rid of the heterodyne. You can have single sideband AM. One good example of that is go up to 14670 and listen to CHU. They run AM, but only one sideband.
WIQ.
N0WIQ, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, with single sideband signals, they could make the receiver with a tighter bandwidth, thus far cutting down the noise within the receiver, and so you could hear it better. And, of course, with a single sideband, the receiver has to insert its own version of a carrier so you can understand it. Little details like that. Of course, if the receiver's inserting a carrier, and it turns across the carrier, it goes squeal, squeal, squeal.
KBS with a question.
Go ahead with your question, sir.
Okay, with the AM and sideband, we have FM and sideband. How come, once you get down into, the 28 megahertz stuff, how come we don't have FM on the HF side?
Nobody wants to run it. And you have to stay below, I believe, 2.75 KC deviation anyway. I have run it on HF. It is legal as long as you don't get it too wide. But nobody uses it. You can, but they don't.
Okay. I was just wondering, because, like on the UHF, EHF, when you're in FM, the signal's always nice and clear. You don't have tons of static. It's like, well, why don't we do FM on the HF bands and get rid of some of this static and stuff that you got to try and dig through?
W2MIC.
W2MIC, go ahead, Mark.
Well, let's talk a little bit about intelligibility versus power. FM, which we're talking on now, has glorious intelligibility and burns lots and lots of power to get that intelligibility. AM, and if you want to think of CB radio here, has pretty good to okay intelligibility and burns lots of power. You will look at your transceiver's manual, you will see that you can run single sideband at 100 watts, but if you're going to run AM, you need to reduce power typically down to 40 or 30%. You're putting a lot more power out. Single sideband is getting to have your cake and eat it too. You have okay intelligibility, as in can you understand what the guy is saying, at absolute minimum power, and as Kuj was noting, at minimum bandwidth. So we use single sideband because with 100 watts we can intelligibly punch through, whereas with AM or FM, we almost certainly could not. I've talked with Kuj on single sideband on 2 meter. It's fun. I have talked with people around the world on AM on HF, and it's fun, but you can't hear them. I've never really tried. I've done a little bit of FM, not much. Generally speaking, because we don't have 10,000 watts or 100,000 watts on our transmitter, and we're not doing shortwave, we're going to use single sideband because it's the best intelligibility for the least power, and off we go.
Also, FM suffers greatly from multipath, a lot from multipath.
Sideband, we have FM sideband, how come we can't? You never see AM, up in the UHF area, and you don't see FM in the HF area.
Dean, you and OJ seem to double, and OJ won, so you want to come back with a comment?
Okay. Oh, I just said, it was just something that kind of popped into my head that, it seems we have AM and sideband on the HF. We have FM and sideband on the UHF, VHF. But you don't see FM down on HF side, and you don't see AM up on the VHF, UHF side.
signal and be
synchronized to it. Or if you're dead nuts on with your receiver in sideband listening to an AM signal, you'll notice that that selective fading no longer happens because you are supplying the carrier that gets knocked out, as it were, from the selective fading. If that's too deep for you, well, eventually it'll make its way clear. But anyway, it took me a long time to figure this stuff out too, so hope that helps you out a little bit more as to why the carrier modes are generally not done on HF, but they are, such as AM. FM, not quite so much, maybe above 29 megs, but yep, we still play AM, and once in a while, selective fading will knock him out.
WIQ.
N0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, if you check the history of radio communications, clear back probably two or three centuries, you'll find that they thought of how to do things incrementally, and the super heterodyne receiver was a big deal, say, a couple of centuries ago. It has been being used ever since that point in time. That meant that you could have an LO and an antenna and make an IF frequency that was super high gain and super selective. And then the receivers got more selective, shall I say. But then there was the AM, that was first. That was simply mixing an audio signal with a carrier and coming up with AM. And that was a simple thing. Just getting rid of the carrier in one sideband is, well, it's a more interesting process, I'll put it that way. And then FM is what they call a full carrier signal that is moved around by the modulation. More of a complex problem or mathematical work. And now we're coming to the point where we're transmitting digital streams with the AM again. We're back to AM, but doing a digital stream. And that makes a very much on a spectrum analyzer. Anyway, it's kind of a history, step by step. Let's make this gain, this gain, this gain, and try to explain it as we go along.
Okay, well, I appreciate the explanation.
W2MIC.
W2MIC, was that Carrie's radio we were hearing, or was it just me that was hearing that?
Oh, I was hearing it.
Okay, well, go ahead with your comment, please, sir.
First, a correction. I said we've known about radio waves since the 1700s. Wrong. We've known about radio waves since the late 1800s. Sorry about that. And the second point is a question you had asked that we then kind of veered off from. I had mentioned that VHF and UHF usually bounce off the ionosphere, and you had said, oh, really? And so I wanted to raise the topic of tropospheric ducting, which is a method or a phenomenon whereby VHF and UHF do travel a long ways rather than zipping straight up through the atmosphere and out.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because I had never really heard that you could do that. I mean, you could basically take the signal and shoot it straight up, but I didn't think it could be reflected.
Yep, tropospheric ducting, as it's called, occurs typically when the atmosphere is very stable, so no hurricanes, no tornadoes, no big jet stream swings, and it is frequently observed underneath temperature inversions. So think of Denver and the brown cloud, or the Bay Area, where you would get a warm layer down by the ground and a cooler layer further up.
Is that quite frequent, or is that something that's rarely one of those things that happens?
I think it's pretty uncommon.
It's uncommon here, but it's relatively common on both of the coasts.
Okay, I'll devil's advocate as usual. Why would it just be, why is it more prevalent on the coast?
Well, there's more humidity and also the ocean and stuff like that. If you have ever watched Ham Nation, old Gordo gives some good examples of that, and he tells you how it works. You could find them if I could remember their numbers. They're generally around late May, early June, when Gordo will explain it again and actually let you listen to the Hawaii beacon from his location in wherever it is he lives in California. And he explains it, of which I kind of remember, but I kind of don't remember. But it does have to do with refraction and stability and the moisture and the cool and warm and all that good stuff. So it's out there. I'd love to hear the Hawaii beacon, but nope. I have worked, however, in late June, all of foreland except Virginia, Kentucky, and North Carolina, but I also can throw in Mississippi. And that was absolutely a hoot with 50 watts, and I was vertically polarized at that time, of which I'm no longer. It might have been better, it might not have been better, whatever, about the polarization and the ducting and stuff like that. But talk about a hoot, Dean. That is absolutely a hoot to work the East Coast on 2 meter sideband. Man, was that fun.
Hey, it sounds like it. Anybody else have anything to add? Can't believe we're done already. It's too early for normal people. Does anybody else have any questions? I think we've kind of beat this to death. I've got a couple announcements I'll make, and then we go into questions here in just a minute.
KE0HHX.
Levi, go ahead.
I figured out that wide versus narrow setting. Just wondered how the signal was. Is it any better?
Yeah, a little. You can still eat the mic, though.
Appreciate that. Thank you. 80HHX.
Levi, grow a mustache and have your mustache brush the microphone.
I'll have to remember that one. 80HHX, back to that.
WAQ, got the microphone?
0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, right now, I'm not talking very loud, but I hope I'm being understood well. I have my microphone in my right hand, pushing the push-to-talk with my index finger, and holding the mic close to my mouth by the thickness of my thumb, and holding the microphone so I talk across it rather than into it. And that is usually a pretty good audio situation. With the microphone.
Yeah, Carrie's audio is very strong.
Anybody else have any comments?
WIQ again?
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, this ICOM 706 Mark II G that I have has a mic gain adjustment, so you can diddle that to change how the microphone responds to your voice also. So it may be a combination of two things, but I've got the mic gain set moderately low and holding the microphone close, like I said I'm doing, and that's the way it is. I could turn the mic gain down to make my voice a little softer, or talk a little softer.
Yeah, mic gain is a good thing. I don't know if this TYT's got a mic gain, or I think the 88 does, but really never kind of fooled with it. I mess with a lot on the HF side, but I don't really fool with it on UHF either. It just seems to work.
KE0KLJ.
Go right ahead, sir.
I'm just now jumping in, so I didn't check in earlier, but I heard you talking about mic gain. Is that also what some people call compression?
No.
Okay, good. Explain the difference, please.
Hello,
OJ.
Okay, well, you have your mic gain, and that would determine how much signal gets from the microphone to whatever the modulator is. Compression, yes, it does kind of act like mic gain, but it will take your voice peaks and will make the lower peaks get up closer to the peaks that the maximums are. It's kind of hard to show without a representation, but it will hold the average modulation peaks up higher than what a regular mic gain would. Mark maybe can fill in the differences there.
W2MIC, sure. Mic gain, as Cooch says, at a given audio output from your mouth, it's simply the amplifier in the microphone and how much signal gets put into the radio's transmission section as a function of microphone gain. So if you're talking at exactly the same amount of loudness and you turn your microphone gain up and down, you will transmit less power at lower mic gain and higher power at high mic gain. And the problem with high mic gain is you get into distortion effects, and the problem with low mic gain is no one can hear you. Compression is somewhat related in the audio stage of the radio, and what compression does is lowers the peaks and amplifies the valleys. So when you're speaking in a normal tone of voice, your louder signal and your more quiet signal will be much more similar when compressed. And the idea here is that you increase intelligibility by putting out more power when you're speaking softly and a little bit less when you're speaking loudly, and that can be easier to understand on the far end of a noisy radio signal. In FM, we don't tend to do compression much, but in single sideband, we're trying to put through as much intelligibility per bandwidth as we can. And what compression does is get you more intelligibility to the ear on the far end in the same amount of bandwidth with less power than if you were not using compression. There is such a thing as too much compression. In other words, this is one of those Goldilocks discussions. If you have too much compression, your signal turns to mush and you're almost impossible to understand.
Okay, yeah, so I understand where you're going with that. I had seen them both used in similar fashion to my gain and compression, and that's where I was a little bit confused. Now, can compression be related, but in the reverse direction to auto gain control?
You're speaking here of auto gain control as you are transmitting, yes?
Yes, yeah, that's why I said in the reverse direction, where you have the auto gain control, you know, of your signal coming in. Is it the same thing, but transmission auto gain in a sense?
Could you help me with terminology here? I'm not familiar with auto gain control on receive, or I'm confused.
I'm not either. We don't use it. Automatic gain, unless you mean AGC in the receiver, which is unrelated.
Yes, I'm talking about AGC, which is auto gain control. But I know it's unrelated because it's on the receive end of it, but in a sense, it equalizes the signal so that you're not overdriving, but you're not underdriving at the same time. Or in receiving, I should say, drive is the other direction. But when you're receiving, it's going to bring in a little bit more gain automatically, where if somebody's not speaking, if you're not receiving a signal that's good enough, it will automatically control the gain to bring the signal in a little bit better. So what I'm hearing about compression is it can act in a similar fashion, but on transmission from the source.
Yeah, but the compression is pretty constant, where the AGC will vary with the signal automatic gain control and receive, which typically in sideband is fast attack, slow decay, or you can, in some receivers, you can adjust the decay to where you might want it better or turn it off altogether. And then, yes, it without the AGC, it might make a signal sound like it is compressed when it's really not. So, they're kind of related, but they're not. So I think we know where he's going with that now, Mark.
Okay, I'm pretty sure I don't understand the question. We should also bring in here the concepts of digital signal processing on receive, and the way in which digital signal processing can strip out the noise and normalize or level out the received signal. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking strictly about AGC?
No, talking strictly AGC and relating that to compression, but I think I have my answer now, where compression is a continuous thing. It's not something that varies one way or the other.
Generally speaking, yes. The level of compression is fixed. It's adjustable, but it's fixed. In the world of audio, and I hope Kevin's here, there used to be a very popular device called a compander, which was a compressor and an expander. And the idea, this was pioneered, I believe, by Dolby. The idea was that you could compress the signal to record onto reel-to-reel tape decks, and then you could reverse that compression, or you could expand the signal. And I have one of those pieces of hardware clamped to my reel-to-reel tape recorder. But no, there is not expansion or decompression in radios that I'm, in amateur radios that I'm aware of.
I guess we're done. I guess I didn't understand. Is everybody, we're finished with that topic?
I think so.
Any follow-up from anybody?
WIQ.
And 0WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, there's any number of things where we could overdrive something and cause the audio to be distorted and hard to understand. And we want to avoid those situations because we want to be understood. Now, radios have gotten better about maintaining modulations and all that kind of stuff, so that it's harder to accomplish an overdrive, but like me, I could turn the mic game way up on the microphone close, and my audio would become distorted rather than understandable.
That's very true. Any other comments? Okay, I got a couple announcements just before we go out for more questions. Four of us, was it four or five? It's four, five, one, two, three, four of us went up to Buckhorn, and I think we pretty much got that thing done. That antenna that James was talking about on Saturday, we were able to get it down, re-drill the holes, put a bracket on that made some sense other than the, just a muffler clamp and or U-bolt. And really put it really stout on there, and we are back up and running, and that should be at 100%. Also, we did have the battery backup put on there. I think he did that on Friday or Thursday. We basically just put a fuse on it, and that's we should be at 100% for Buckhorn that I can think of. For those of you who were not at the meeting, we... and I guess I'm part of this thing because I haven't paid anybody yet. the $3,000 we appropriated for an upgrade for Horse Tooth, we should be able to get those in the parts in a couple weeks. And again, who knows what we're going to be fighting as far as weather goes or anything like that. So that should be up and running. If we get in there and we can get in there before it snows and things like that, we should be good to go. But it's going to take probably more than one day to do everything that he wanted to do. So there's that. 80TYU. Any other questions for the net tonight?
KD0ZWU.
KD0ZW, go ahead, Terry.
I couldn't make the meeting on Saturday, but the topic of discussion was very much interest to me about radio interference. Does anybody have a summary of what was presented?
Well, I have the slides, but I don't have the presentation, if you will. It was the slides were basically just slides of various things that he was talking about as he went on for interferences, and we'll talk about a sawtooth wave and various other things. But I don't have the presentation.
WIQ.
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, I don't think Bob got as deep into RFI as he thought he probably would, but the idea is simple. You can use various combinations of sine waves and make any kind of waveform you want to make. And if the waveform has a vertical edge on it, there is a high frequency component, which means that it will spread out over some set of frequencies, and we're talking about a spectrum spread so that there can be more interference from a sharp edge than from a pure sine wave. And so the big thing there was making waveforms by combining sine waves. And chances are we're talking about a sine wave with harmonics, and mixing the harmonics with the fundamental sine wave, and coming up with different waveforms or wave shapes. I used the spectrum analyzer to tune a rectangular waveform for one of the generators I used, and the generator basically caught the zero crossings of a sine wave with a comparator to make the rectangular wave, and I had to adjust it for near symmetrical rectangular wave, and then the odd harmonics came up and the even harmonics went down, so to speak. So, hey, that was an experience I had that kind of was a form of how I understood what Bob was saying also.
Anything else? Okay, as I said earlier, we are moving this net to 6:30 to be consistent with the Wednesday night net. Plus, we had a lot of people vote for that. We had a couple people that said they would rather have the 7 o'clock, but the majority of us said they didn't care. And we had six people that said they'd rather go to the 6. So it's 2-6. And so that's what we've got. So we're going to start our net again at 6:30. No early check-ins on that type of thing for the Monday night. Wednesday night will remain the same. If there's no other questions, go back out and see if there's any other questions. Well, hearing none, this is KDZTYU. We're going to close the net. The repeater is open for general use. Everybody have a pleasant evening and stay out of the wind.